Hello and welcome to this week's Therapy for Me, and what a lot of red grapes there are. Now, you might wonder where I'm starting with that, and that would be fair, actually. That would be fair. In the context of the fact that I do often say exactly what's running through my head, then I've just had a handful of red grapes, and I noticed that they tasted different to the last red grapes I had. And this is probably an Aldi Lidl thing, but when you buy something like that every week, because we get through quite a lot of red grapes, we easily get through two you know, packs of grapes in a week. But week by week, they change. They change in size, they change in colour. And I know you're going to say, yes, of course they do, because there are loads of varieties of red grapes. But when you eat something with quite that regularity, you notice that change. It's very, very evident in a way that when you have something and then you have a gap and you have something and you have a gap, you don't notice in the same way. Anyway, none of that is pertinent to this week's Therapy for Me. I was just thinking it, so I thought I would mention it. Let's crack on with a bit of that twangy guitar.
Monday.
I happened to notice this morning that there was a lot that my sock drawer has in common with haggis. Now, you're going to have to stick with me on this because it was very, very evident to me, but it might not be as evident to you for two reasons. One, you might not be aware of my sock drawer, and secondly, you might not be a regular haggis preparer or eater. It's more to do with preparation, actually, than it is to do with eating. And I don't know if actually this is the same issue depending on the type of haggis you have. It might be that the more kind of supermarket haggis versus, say, a butcher-made haggis, there's a different outcome, or not outcome, there's a different experience. So that might also play into it a little bit. So if you're a particular fan of haggis and are a particular avid haggis preparer and somewhat of an authority on haggis, or if this is a triggering subject for you because you're very, very protective of your haggis, then I apologise in advance. Right. So, for whatever reason, and I'm sure it's not just me, and I'm sure it's something to do with the spongy nature of socks, particularly that kind of sports type sock that seems to be a bloke thing, that you have. We used to get socks that were just white, and now we get a variety of different coloured, sort of same style of socks that are quite springy in terms of their stretchy and their springy. So if you've got a drawer full of those, and I have a drawer full of those, I had some Bramble ones that were great, and I don't know what the brand is I've currently got, and they're quite nice as well. TK Maxx special, actually. You get some cracking socks at TK Maxx from brands you're not used to, but are quality-wise fantastic. Anyway, there's your sock recommendation for the week. Moving on, though, because they're springy, because they're stretchy and springy, a la a sports sock, what it means is that you can force quite a lot of them into a sock drawer, but then they expand out again. So you compress them and push them in, but then they expand out. So when you try and open the drawer, often it's a tough kind of open because they've expanded out. And because I tend to wedge, for whatever reason, I don't like throwing socks away. I always seem to work on the assumption that I need, you know, a goodly number of pair of socks, even though for a long time now, it's been a pair a day. You know, it's not, my foot quota hasn't increased at any point, well, in my life, really. So the need for 25, 30 pairs of socks, I've never really worked out. I don't carry the same number of everything else, but for whatever reason, I seem to have a lot of socks, and so I force them into the sock drawer. So when my socks are all clean, and there are very few going through the washing cycle, there's a lot in there, you push them in. Consequently, you're then forcing the drawer open. And then when you actually get the drawer open, it kind of expands out in the way you'd expect it to. You push something down, you force it in, you open it up, boom, it flies out. That's the sensation, the closest thing my sock drawer resembles is when you pierce a haggis. So if you boil a haggis for 45, 50 minutes, whatever it is that you boil it for, and I'm going more for the sort of plastic encased haggis now, when you then go to get the haggis out and get rid of the casing, the first thing you do is you puncture it, and a bit like a jacket potato that hasn't been pricked, it expands. The first thing it does is it leaves the casing at speed, so you get this kind of this rush of haggis through the incision, and it forces its way out. And it's something that actually triggers Mrs. Short. She can't deal with that first incision in a haggis. And yet, for me, the closest thing I can think about is trying to get socks out of my drawer.
Tuesday.
Clearly, we're not going to be done in 10 minutes this week, because we've just spent 5 minutes talking about sock drawers. So you've probably worked out this is going to be a longer TFM than, or more like the normal kind of TFM, because I'm rambling. Let's face it, I'm rambling. It's Friday night, I'm rambling. I wanted to talk about a couple of things that make no sense, or rather make a lot of sense, but will pass people by, but they shouldn't pass people by. And I'm going to go politics, and I'm sorry, but I heard this on this fact on another podcast, and it got me thinking. And then I've just read something else that's got me thinking, and I wanted to just share those two things because both have struck me quite hard. The first one is to do with everything that's going on with the Rwanda bill. And I don't know how much longer the Rwanda bill is going to take before the Lords finally acquiesce. But I'm very, very pleased that the Lords at this point in time show no sign of wanting to let go of what is a terrible piece of legislation. So they are fulfilling their task in holding, as a secondary chamber, in holding legislation to account, particularly politically motivated legislation. And this is pure politically motivated legislation, because it makes no sense as a piece of policy in its own right. The interesting thing about that, and this is where I'm concerned, but I'm concerned now on two levels, and this is about the heart and soul of a political party. And the fact of the matter is, whatever has happened over the however long to the Conservative Party, there is now a bypass. We have now gone so far past the things that should be in its DNA that now aren't, and normal, sane, rational people have found themselves in a space where they are acting in a way where, when you just call it out calmly, it makes no sense. So, as one of the things that was being talked about in the Rwanda bill, one of the things the Lords inserted was just a single amendment. It was just a single clause, just to state that that bill should operate within international and domestic law. Okay, very simple thing. Whatever happens, whatever part of the policy, it just must adhere to, uphold international and domestic law. The kind of thing you shouldn't need to even call out. We should not have a piece of legislation that in some way, shape or form is working in contravention of basic, you know, law, as in, you know, certainly basic international law. And yet only one, when it went back through the Commons this week, only one Conservative voted in favour of that particular amendment. So every other member of the Conservative Party, and they were in their droves to vote down all these Lords amendments, voted that one down as well. So a sane party full of sane people are effectively saying, we want something, even if it contravenes international law. Now, that's really scary. That's really scary in terms of the distance we've travelled. The other thing is, let's go back to this Tory donor that made the racist and misogynistic remarks, which I've now seen are in the process of being scrutinised by the police. But that will fall where it may. That donor has put up £15 million, which is the figure that's been touted and reported and hasn't been refuted. So we knew about the 10, but there's another 5. So there's £15 million that have come from that particular donor in very short order into the Conservative Party. The limit for a electoral spend for a party, the agreed limit is £35 million. So at that point in time, you are talking about in the regions of 40% of the entire Conservative budget for the general election come from those two, or however many there were, but those donations from that particular donor. Which means in reality that virtually every single MP will use some of that money for something. It will go on Facebook ad placement, or it will go on digital media or what have you, but it will probably touch every single one of those MPs fighting for seats the next time round. How have we got ourselves into a situation where that proportion of a party's funding can come from a source like that and it be normalised? That's the bit that I'm now struggling with. In a week where we've had Michael Gove tell us what extremism means, and more importantly, in defining it, saying where government won't give money, where taxpayers' money cannot go, because we've determined that the views of those groups are abhorrent, at the same time taking money, which will form the basis of what it will use to try and get itself re-elected.
Wednesday.
As you know, I don't tend to use a fruity language, shall we say, in TFM. No reason, and we've talked about this in the past, no reason as to why I don't do or I don't. I just don't. I haven't done from the word go, and it is what it is. Occasionally I do, but I normally give you a warning. I'm giving you a fair warning that I am going to use a more expressive piece of language than I would normally use, but it's in context and I'm going to just leave it there for that reason. There was a WhatsApp exchange between me and Steve Hogarth this week, and we'd recorded on Tuesday episode 201 of the Corona Diaries, and I got a message completely apropos of nothing, 4:30. Have you a postal address? At which point I said, yes. Would you like it? And he came back and said, yes, you dopey fucker. Which made me howl, because those things do. It was just the way it came back in those four words, and it made me howl. Right, that's not the reason for the story, but I found that amusing, so I thought I would mention it anyway. A postcard then appeared the next day, and for the first time in all the time I've been doing the Corona Diaries with Steve, bearing in mind he sends postcards out to everybody who's a patron of TCD, and sends them a birthday card, I got one. Now, I am a patron of TCD as well. So, irrespective of the fact that I don't necessarily need to be a patron of it, because I know what's going to be in it, because I've edited most of them, or I've certainly listened to it. I've listened to every single one before it's gone out. So, I'm not getting anything content-wise back. But I've never troubled him for a birthday card, because, you know. But my first TCD postcard appeared, and it sat on my desk, and it was a beautiful thing. So I'm just saying, I am in that group of purples now who have a postcard, and I knew something was coming, but I didn't know what it exactly was, because I didn't know, even knew that it was my birthday, and it's there, and I was quite touched.
Thursday.
Okay, I'm going to talk something through in the hope that I can make some sense of it as I talk it through, because I'm not quite sure how I feel. In fact, I am conflicted on this. It's not a big thing being conflicted on. I feel one way because of something that happened, but then I don't necessarily feel like I'm right to feel that way. But then what I'm going to come down to is things making sense, essentially. I'm going to come down to the fact that maybe this is the thing, and maybe I am supportive of it, but actually in the round it doesn't make sense, and that's then my problem with it, if that makes sense, which it probably doesn't. So, I had a meeting today with a colleague in the British Library on Euston Road. which is an amazing building. I really, really liked it. And there's a great cafe on the second floor. And we knew we needed to sit and chat. And so we went and ordered the coffee, had a piece of cake, great piece of apple slice, fantastic. And we sat and chatted a bit. And then we broke the laptops out. And we'd had the laptops open for about 5 minutes. And we were just starting to, you know, get connected and look at a couple of things. And we'd said we were going to sit there for a little while and probably have some lunch. And the guy who'd served us came over and said, you're going to have to close us down. We don't allow laptops. And so first thing is I don't like being admonished like I'm a 7-year-old. But let's leave that to one side because that's a personal thing. So we packed the laptops up and we sat and we did what you do in that situation, which is we bitched about it. And we were looking around and we were the only people in there who'd been using laptops. But there were people on the phones and there were people having meetings and there were people talking. And so we were trying to work out what they were trying to achieve by not allowing laptops. Now, I get the whole idea of table blocking. So I get the whole idea that one person would go somewhere like that. They would buy a coffee, they would sit down, they would start doing some work, and 3 hours later they'd still be there. And I absolutely get it. And if that makes it difficult for other people to go and sit down and have some lunch, and you end up putting people off going because it's always full of single people or whatever it might be, people having meetings, da-da-da, I absolutely get it. I don't need telling that that's a thing. And it comes down to, in my mind, it comes down to reasonable human behaviour, i.e. you don't go somewhere and you don't sit and you don't take up space and you don't do the bare minimum in terms of, you know, a glass of water or whatever it might be, just because you want to use the Wi-Fi and you want to use the power and you want somewhere to work. I get all of that, particularly because the British Library has a lot of space in it for people to go and sit and study. And they allow you to bring your own drink in and all those kind of things. So the cafe is definitely there for you to go and purchase. Now, we'd spent 15 quid on two drinks and two cakes. So we had purchased and we'd been in there 15 minutes. Now, I've ended up going and reading an article that talked about natural stays in places like cafes and restaurants. That if you go in there and you don't open a laptop or engage with something like that, you will drink your coffee, you'll have a chat, and your natural period of staying might be 30, 35, 40 minutes. Whereas as soon as you start work, that stay becomes elongated, but you don't necessarily buy anymore, so it's bad for the environment that you're in. I get all of that. Here's where I'm conflicted. Firstly, it was a quarter full. Okay, so at no point, whether we use laptops or we didn't, did it make any difference to the fact there was plenty of availability, because there was plenty of availability. Okay, and there were also plenty of people sitting one to a table where there was two of us. Secondly, we'd been in there 10 minutes. So we'd not been given the opportunity to block the place out because we'd been in there 10 minutes at that point. This is the bit that I don't get. We then sat and did the bits and pieces we needed to do on phones. Okay? Now, there was some stuff we couldn't do and we ended up moving and going somewhere where we could work on laptops. But for a period of time, we sat and we did some stuff on our phones. In fact, we found a little app called Todoist, which is a great way of doing collaborative to-do lists, effectively. And so actually, it prompted us to do something we've been talking about doing, and actually we ended up doing that. I'm doing it on phones. So it wasn't a screen thing. There was also Wi-Fi available in there, so why would you make Wi-Fi available for anything other than a laptop's, in effect, because phones don't need it. So Wi-Fi is available, which realistically talks to laptops, but you're not allowed to use them. But the real big thing about this, where it makes no sense, is that on the table next to us, there were two people clearly having a meeting, and they'd got a couple of files and they'd got paper everywhere. So they were working on something together, and it was clearly some form of collaborative thing, but they were using paper. So a judgment's been made there that you're And they were there way before we arrived, and they were there when we left, and they'd had a coffee each. That's all they'd had. But the judgment was that because that is somehow more worthy, I don't know where that comes from, but somehow because they had got files and information and they were making notes, that that's okay, but working and having the same meeting with two laptops isn't. So there's where I'm struggling with it. I'm not struggling with it for the reasons being X, Y, and Z. If you're trying to stop this or that or what have you, I'm fine with that. Absolutely fine with that. But no, at no point did it say you couldn't use them on the way in. At no point could anybody explain, or did they take any trouble to explain why you couldn't use laptops. And why could you then do everything other than just have a laptop screen? So we're now just back to those moments where you put a rule in place that doesn't stand up to any form of scrutiny in reality. What it basically means is, basically, you don't like the look of people in your British Library Cafe on laptops. That's kind of what it comes down to, because you find with people outside using them and working, you just don't like it in there. So it's probably been somebody complaining that they don't like to look at it. I don't want to sit and have my lunch and look at somebody on a laptop. And that's probably where it's come from. I'm guessing. Not quite sure.
Friday.
I have a friend called Silja who lives in Hamburg, and she never forgets my birthday. And that in itself is absolutely lovely. And she is lovely, and she's remarkably thoughtful. And I don't get a chance to see it as often as I would like. And she's one of the patrons of both the Crone Diaries and of TFM. And she's just a lovely person, a really thoughtful, really lovely person. I believe the name does equate to, or does link to, Cecilia. In terms of a translation, or in terms of where you do that thing where you look at a name in one language versus its counterpart in another, which is why I'm going to go for Cecilia as the episode title and also the piece of music for this week. And what a cracking tune. What a cracking tune. So it's nice to be able to actually join those dots and do that. But the reason why I'm mentioning it is because I arrived home today and there was a parcel from Cecilia, and she sent me the most amazing little print that's on my wall of a Marillion album cover, the Hour Before It's Dark album cover, which is there. I'm looking at it as I'm speaking. It's great, and it's one of the things that adorns my office. But she sent me something, and I don't know what it is. I'm trying to think how I can describe it. It's the similar shape to a trivet, right? Okay, so it's probably 6-7 inches across. It's fabric. It's like woven balls of fabric that are all go together. So it's little circles. And I'll put a picture of it on my Instagram feed. And it's relatively thick. It's probably a centimeter or so thick. And it's clearly something you would put something on. I'm guessing it's something you would put something on. It could be something that goes on the wall, actually. It could just go on the wall. It could just be something decorational. But it looks like a big coaster. And I don't know what it's for. I've no idea what it's for. I didn't know if it was a trivet or something you would put a teapot on, maybe. Could you put a teapot on it? You could, but it's not. It's not a flat surface, but you could put a teapot on it. As I say, if it was smaller, you could use it as a coaster for a mug. So I'm kind of putting it out there. A, just to say thank you very much, Silja. You're an absolute star and I love it. But I'd really quite like to know what it is. And it probably is exactly what I've probably just said it is. Or it's probably just something. It's probably just a decoration or something. Or it's something specifically German that everybody in Germany would go, oh, yes, one of them. And I've no idea what one of them is. So thank you. It's, as always, hugely thoughtful and absolutely lovely. And it's purple and it's fantastic and I love it. I just don't know what it is. I don't necessarily need to know what it is, but if somebody would like to tell me, and Silja, if you'd like to get back to me and tell you, that would be great. But whether you do or whether you don't, It's still a thing of beauty, and I'm very, very touched. Anyway, that's me. Obviously a bit rambly this week. No idea why. I've no idea how any of these things happen until I hit the record button. But that's just how I'm feeling this way around as I enter my 54th year. Which, do you know what? Wasn't as bad. You know what? And maybe I'm coming to some sense of balance with the whole birthday event, but wasn't the end of the world. It was fine. Got through it. Absolutely, you know, yeah. All good. Right, I hope you're well. I will speak to you soon. Stay safe and have a nice weekend.
If you've enjoyed Therapy for Me, then please subscribe and share as you see fit. This has been an A Short Stories production.